Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso. It's me, your fearless leader, Christopher Crespo, film critic leader. I'm here with Drewster Cogburn. How's it going, Drew?
What up, dude?
And special guest Aaron Weiss. Weiss, right?
Weiss.
Correct, Aaron, yes. Weiss from cinemafunk.com.
Hello, yep.
How's it going, buddy?
Doing well. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming on to a Cinema Crespo Diso this week. This is our special Florida Film Festival bonus episode.
Bonus.
The bonus. It wraps up this weekend. Today's the last day. Mm-hmm. But we're taking a couple hours out to review what we've seen. Actually, we're taking some time out to review what Aaron's seen.
A couple hours.
Well, we're also recording episode 14 after this.
Oh,
we're
yes,
doing
correct.
Two. We're doing two episodes. Correct. This is gonna be a quick
it's
one.
It's a twofa.
This is gonna be a quick one. We're gonna review what Aaron's seen, and we're gonna throw in our 2 cents on the few movies that we managed to make
the
it.
The couple
through.
Of movies that I managed to see this film festival.
My fourth film festival, Aaron. 4 years in a row. Easily my worst showing of all of them. Just circumstances, other obligations, other things going on.
This was a gauntlet for me. I saw...
How many did you see in total?
In total, not including the last one I'm going to see tonight, I'll be seeing... I've seen 23 here at the Florida Film
23
Festival.
Already.
Good Lord.
23 movies.
In how many days?
Since last Saturday,
since
right?
Last Saturday,
so it's,
yeah.
Just a week.
So
just about a week.
So 7 days, there were 24 few. Movies.
What's the math on that?
That's like 3 a day.
Yes, roughly about 3 days.
That's rough.
4 movies I saw at a couple of the press screenings that they had the previous week.
Okay.
So there's a little cheating in there,
but
I still saw them.
Yeah, so they count.
Yes.
They totally count.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I saw, not counting the movies I'm planning on seeing today, which numbers in a total of 1, maybe 2, probably only see 1. I've seen 3 whole films at this year's film festival. And Drewster...
Counting the movie that I'm probably going to skip out on tonight. that would be my grand total to 2.
Oh, wow. It's been bad.
Yeah. Well, when I'm working nights, it's rough because during the week, the entire film festival was going on during the week while I was at...
Yeah, you're working. I had podcasting obligations and a day job. Last year, I saw like 12 films. Last year was my best. I saw 12 movies on top of... working and doing everything, and this year was the complete opposite.
Yeah,
but and then we committed to this bonus episode.
Yeah.
That's why we're spending the first 2 minutes talking about how we didn't see anything.
Well, hey, we got somebody here who did.
We got someone here who did, a film critic who I read your stuff. I like what you do. You bring some good insight to what you see. I don't read that many other critics. Because when you're a film critic, let's talk about that real quick. How many other critics do you read? Are there other critics that you read on the reg? Or?
Not really. I do read a lot of news and history articles about film. I
more about the context stuff.
More about what's going on. Not too many other critics. Maybe about 3 or 4.
I read about like maybe 5, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 critics total.
Yeah,
and then really? two of them have gimmicks. One of them film crit Hulk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where he writes in all caps, like he's the Hulk.
Critic Hulk and what was it? Something with Elmo.
I don't know an Elmo.
There's an Elmo.
There's a film critic Elmo.
There's a film critic Elmo.
He came after Hulk.
Yeah.
What a ripoff.
But I haven't seen him on Twitter recently.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Maybe Hulk got to him.
Yeah.
Outlaw Vern. I'm a fan of Outlaw Vern.
Not familiar.
Outlaw Vern. No, buddy. You want to pause for a second?
No. Just keep going. It's okay.
I got it, bro.
I got it.
All right.
Yeah, spillage.
Outlaw Vern. He bills himself as an outlaw, as a reformed criminal turned film critic. He started writing by submitting reviews to Ain't It Cool News like 10 years ago, and then he got his own website going through GeoCities. That's how long he's been around.
Good
old GeoCities.
That is old school.
The greatest thing he's ever done. He has a very specific outtake too. Where he's a lot about badass cinema and badass juxtaposition. How like badass characters have puppies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really into Seagal. He wrote Seagalogy, the study of the ass kicking films of Steven Seagal, and it's like an in depth look at the first 22 movies of Steven Seagal's career, split into eras, looked at chronologically. And broken down. It's ridiculous. It puts way more work into it than anyone. I mean, he created Seagalogy, the study of Seagal's films. Those are the type of film critics I like.
Those,
they have a hook to them.
Yes, and that type of criticism, breaking things down, and studying that one thing. That's, that I really enjoy.
It's fun. Yeah. You would really enjoy Psychology, actually, because it's a very funny. It's very humorous, but it's also serious and breaking down all the
Fair because I am probably the last person that would enjoy a Seagal film.
Really?
So yes, I'm not really.
Ooh, that might be a great experiment for you. Actually, see how much you would. Enjoy the book on its own because I think it's an extremely enjoyable read.
Yeah,
whether
well,
you like Seagal
love Steven Seagal though.
I love him, so it's
biased.
Easy for me to like to picture what he's talking about. But the way this guy writes, he's really funny. Mm-hmm. I think even if you don't like Seagal, you'd find a lot of jokes in there. They're like, aha, yeah, he is like that, you know, because it's very open. Even though this guy loves Seagal, he's very. Now we're talking about Verne and Seagalology. Read Seagalology. Just okay. All right, check it out. But let's talk about the Florida Film Festival because that's what we're here to do. I'm totally wasting time. That's guys got. We need a producer here to stop me when those things happen. I'm my own worst enemy sometimes. The Florida Film Fest. We're going to talk about this in chronological order. You've seen 24 movies. I asked you to give me 10 that you really want to talk about. Pretty much the 10 that you like the most so far. And we'll do them from the first one you've seen. So did you see the Friday night opening movie at all?
I chose to skip that one.
Yeah.
I was visiting friends. I chose to skip that
Word.
One. Yeah.
I find that the opening night film is surprisingly skippable.
Yeah,
a lot of times it is.
Very few festivals. I'm like, yeah, I'll go to that one. Yeah. It's going to be
everyone shows up. Yeah. And then with the press pass, it's like,
you're always last in. So
good luck finding standing room only.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to stand around for an hour and then.
And then see a movie that's like,
yeah.
All right, so Saturday. Sunday, what's the first movie that you want to talk about from the first weekend, from last weekend?
The first film was This Is Where We Live.
Okay, let me see if I can, as you talk about it, let me see if I can remember, because I looked through the whole guide. Okay. This Is Where We Live is a documentary?
No.
All right, then I don't know what it is.
Okay, it's actually a narrative feature by, let me see if I can bring this up, directed by Josh Barrett and Mark Menchaca?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I pronounced that incorrectly.
By a team.
It's actually a very good narrative film.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a family who is the son has cerebral palsy and the father, has early onset Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
And the mother is trying to balance this, and she also has a daughter who you'd think would be helping out, but she's very despondent.
Mm-hmm.
She does know how to help out, but she's not. She's very promiscuous. A lot of alcoholism and drug use.
So it's a family drama about just like a family that's deteriorating. The mom's trying to hold it all together.
Correct. Yeah, and she has her own health problems. But there's another central character that comes aboard. This carpenter who builds a ramp.
Jesus?
Is
it Jesus?
I was just about to say. You said a carpenter comes, and I'm
close.
Like,
it
Jesus?
Might as well be. Yeah. But of course, that iconography is there. But he kind of helps. He becomes the caregiver to the child with cerebral palsy.
Uh-huh.
So he kind of becomes a part of this family. So it's a Texan Hill Country locale. Very good. I just really enjoyed it. I would say definitely check that one out.
This is, what's it called again?
This is Where We Live.
This Is Where We Live, right? When you started mentioning the cerebral palsy and everything, I was like, I remember scanning that one and not sounding very interested. It sounds like a downer. Is it a bit of a downer?
But then it
gets
is.
A little inspiring at the end.
It gets
uplift.
It's very well balanced and just a very good narrative. These characters look like, and the actors did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
They could have just as easily been non-actors plucked out of the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very surprised to find out the person who played the child with, well, it was an adult with cerebral palsy, does not have it in real life.
Oh, wow.
So
nice.
I was very surprised.
One of those
that.
Daniel Day-Lewis situations.
Oh,
yeah.
So it was just a fantastic performance. It's a performance.
Right on. What, is this something you expect maybe getting a limited release in theaters? Is it something people are going to have to end up seeing on Netflix in a year?
I think it might have a very small, limited release, but of course it'll land on Netflix at one point or another.
Yes, that's how people are going to end up watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how a lot of these are going to end up being.
Most of the films we're going to be talking about today will land on Netflix one time or another.
All right, but keep an eye out for that one. What was that? That was on Saturday?
That was on Saturday.
All right, what else we got going on?
I actually saw, there's a few films that I have here that I saw during the press screenings.
Okay.
One of them was The Forgotten Kingdom.
That's the one with the... Isn't that one that's like the chick and the dude and... I forgot which one.
Not even close.
Not even close.
It's...
The chick and the dude. You were really vague, too, and you still weren't close.
Wow, yeah. What is it? Which one is this one, then? Yeah. I totally screwed that one up.
The Forgotten Kingdom is actually one of my favorites of the festival in terms of the ones that were actually part of the narrative
competition. The competition, okay.
It's set in South Africa and a country called Lesotho.
Okay.
And I actually had an interview with the director earlier on as well, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
It's about a man who has to come back to his home country of Lesotho to bury his father, who died from complications of AIDS.
Okay.
And he is sort of thrown back into his original culture. He was taken out of it and had to live in a modern urban society, and he's getting reacquainted with his native culture.
Yeah.
He falls in love with a woman who he knew when he was younger, who has a sister also with AIDS.
Well, where is he from that he's getting reconnected with his roots?
He was in Lesotho, and then he lived in Johannesburg.
Okay, so he went to the big city, Joburg.
Yes. Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay.
And right. He comes back, and he ends up having to go on this journey with this unnamed child guide.
Yeah.
And to kind of find this new love of his.
Interesting.
And so it's about him reconnecting with his culture, as well as also gives us a little bit of perspective of the HIV and AIDS. It's more of a curse there.
Okay.
You know, here we...
The way it's treated and the way it's seen, the perception of it, and the people who get it, it's like they deserve it more than being a victim.
Yes.
You're
looked at as
an outcast.
A sinner. But here in developed countries, you've had so many medical advancements where, you know, you're not...
Well,
it's
just seen as what it is.
It's a disease.
It's a disease.
It's not witchcraft.
You're trying... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Disease is not witchcraft. It takes medicine and not slugs. So.
Exactly.
But it's a very beautiful film. There's certain shots that look like paintings.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so... Very classic.
Interesting.
It's so if you're sick and tired of this nonstop action, if you're sick and tired of the Seagull,
yeah,
Seagull
film, yeah,
I think you'll enjoy Forgotten.
Film festivals are great for stuff like that. It's always like the anti what's in mainstream theaters. You know, it's the stuff
Definitely.
You're not going to find at the mall.
That's what I really like about the Florida Film Festival. They always have a very solid but eclectic programming. Even the worst film is better than a lot of films that are out today.
It's true. Yeah. It's very, very true. Yeah. So The Forgotten Kingdom, that one's definitely one to remember.
Check it out.
Yep.
And that definitely sounds like another Netflix or...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thank God for Netflix.
Yes.
Man, and all those services.
Where films go to die.
It would seem that way, but
or
you know, Netflix is strong.
Or
forever.
Do they go there to die, or do they go there to live forever?
Yeah, they go there to actually make a little bit of money.
I agree. I think I misspoke. You're right. They'll be there
forever.
I think
in rotation.
Crackle
forever.
Is where movies go to die. Or actually, when you release your movie directly to iTunes, that's where your movie goes to die. Like Ed Byrne said that a few years ago. He released the movie, skip theaters, skip DVD, directly to iTunes.
Really?
That's how much no one wanted to touch that piece of shit.
Wow.
Ed Byrne sucks.
Poor Ed.
He deserves everything he gets. He's a terrible, terrible... He's just the worst person in the world.
Awesome.
He just seems that way. I have no idea. I've never met him. All right, so what else? What else we got here?
Another film that I saw during the press screening that I loved a lot was I Declare War.
Okay, I saw that one last night.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so so let's talk about I Declare War. That's the one where a bunch of kids are just playing a game of capture the flag,
mm-hmm.
and this is also the prerequisite. If you go to a film festival, you got to see a Canadian film. You have to. Every film festival, no matter where, you got to see a Canadian movie. So this is the one Canadian one I saw. A bunch of kids are just playing capture the flag, playing war, but it's through their imagination.
Yes,
so at first you see them with their real, like, made out of wood guns, and I assume they just go bang, you know. But then it quickly cuts to them with like AKs that are actually firing and grenades and rocket launchers, and it's like really violent and over the top. But it's not bloody or anything.
It's
a little bloody, just a little itty bitty bit of blood.
But it's funny. It's very ironic because you have these little adorable children having very serious conversations
about war
and
stratagem.
And you'll see films like you see all this. Like Commando, a lot of these action-packed war films.
Yeah.
And they even, one of the characters, you know, talks about Patton and such like that.
That's like his go-to movie. He loves Patton. He's the lead general, the kid that's never lost. PK.
I think
it was PK. He was the wicked, not the wicked. He was like really good general. I really like how... For half the movie, I didn't realize it was Canadian. I was just watching a movie, just a bunch of kids. And then some kids mentions his hockey cards. I'm like, well, red flag. Something's weird here. And then I started actually listening. And then the next scene, one kid finishes sentences with A.
Yeah.
And then the very next line, a kid, he says like oots instead of out or something.
Something about a hoser or like, something.
Oh, no, that never came up. It's like, oh, this is so Canadian. You know, as I was watching it, I was like, this is fun. I'm enjoying it. But wasn't this a short film that got expanded? Is that how this one was born out?
I'm not familiar. I don't know.
I thought that might have been it. It definitely feels like a short film. Mm-hmm. Like this would have been a masterful 10-minute movie. But stretched out to like 80, 90 minutes. Like it felt like to me there's a feeling of stretching, you know, like
a little bit.
Yeah,
but
cause
not
like,
too much.
Not too much, but still felt like it would have worked better in a more compact form. Mm-hmm. Because doing it this way, they kind of at times were spinning their wheels and the characters really weren't being that developed. It was just a bunch of kids. It was almost like they're trying to ride on the concept, the high concept itself of, oh, it's kids doing war, but we're doing it through their imagination, so that should be enough. And so as I was watching, I was like, what's the point? Looking back on it now, because, you know, I saw it yesterday, so I had time to ruminate on it, it does feel like it's more of a comment on action movies these days, and action movies in general, and how they're adolescent fantasies a lot of the time. They don't really portray realistic action. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's a lot like kids in the woods with fake guns, and it's all in their head, and they're, yeah, and they get a count off 10 steamboats, you know, if unless they get grenaded, and then they still live. It's like video game violence, sort of. And it's sort of satirizing, like, that style of action movies in general.
Yeah, but it's also, in the film, they use a lot of the dialogue that we hear today when it comes to war. A lot of gray areas, torture.
Yeah, yeah, prisoners.
Taking prisoners. So there is a little bit more to it than just that.
I was a little disappointed how they set up this awesome like drone thing in the beginning, mm-hmm, dropping bombs, and then they really didn't use it. And they used it for something else at the end.
Yeah.
It's like, you know. It's,
but how they
set up something
it,
really cool, yeah, and then they never.
But how they discussed it really can take you back to the firebombing in World War II.
Oh, yeah,
they're talking
yeah.
about how many
to maximize
more,
impact.
Exactly. And yeah. there is a little bit more to it than just, you know, a satire.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I laughed a lot. You know, it's Lord of the Rings meets
Lord of the Flies.
Lord
of the Rings meets Lord of the Flies.
Yeah,
it's two bands of kids coming against each other.
That would be a crazy movie.
We're missing orcs. There is a kid with a wolf. There's a kid with the wolf who doesn't speak until the very end. He's like, oh,
yes,
good boy.
That's like cool.
That. Yeah, but and the wolf just looks cool. Does he actually do anything? I can't remember. Does he?
I don't remember.
I don't think
either,
he does.
Yeah.
I think he's just standing around looking cool.
Intimidating. He does do one thing once, but he does look very intimidating.
Yeah, he does look very intimidating. Yeah. If you can get a wolf-like dog, half wolf, Nikita, anything in your movie, you gotta get in there somewhere just because they're intimidating looking. So I liked it. I thought it was good. That's going to pop up on Netflix in the next 6 to 12 months for sure. It's not going to be no theaters for that one.
Yeah, no.
No. But not here in America.
Probably not. This will probably go right to VOD.
Yeah, you'll
probably see it in Canada.
Yeah, so our Canadian listeners, we do have Canadian listeners.
I'm sure
in
we
Toronto
do.
So, no, we definitely do.
Got to be one.
I can tell you his Twitter handle right now, but I don't know if he wants me to put it out there. You guys get to see it. I declare war. It's one of your native countrymen, bunch of hoosers. Is that what they call them?
Is that what they call
each other? I don't know. Canadians are cool people. All right. So what else we got?
I also saw Year of the Dead, which is a documentary about Night of the Living
Dead. Night of the Living Dead, right? About the making of it and its legacy and all that.
Yes, the whole thing. And they just solely focus on the one film. They focus on the production history, context at the time.
Because when was that? That was mid-60s when it was made?
I think it was 67, 68.
So late 60s.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on in our politics and social.
It was a crazy time.
Civil rights.
Yeah. Crazy time.
And so what this director, Rob Coons, did, who I also interviewed, he went the production route. He learned about the whole production of it. Talked to critics like Elvis Mitchell and Mark Harris.
Nice.
He did a lot of great research, really showing the social context and also the reception history of it, you know, how it was really received.
Yep.
And didn't really talk about any of the franchises or the parodies or anything like that. He's solely focused on
one movie.
Yeah, so it kind of gives other people a chance to take a look at the rest.
If they want to follow up, maybe do a separate documentary, because Dawn of the Dead would deserve its own documentary for sure. All the other ones after that, I don't know. You could probably wrap up everything else in one film.
Real quick.
In a short film.
And from what I understand, he was making this film. It took him like 6 years or so.
Nice.
And so he originally got his interview with George A. Romero while he was working on Diary of the Dead.
Okay.
So there's that whole perspective of it. But yeah, it's a really good documentary. If you really just like horror films or zombie films, this is a good one to get through. It's not... It's very intellectual.
Nice.
So you get a little bit of everything.
A scholarly look at Night of the Living Dead. Yeah, that's why I definitely should have been able to check out. All right, what else we got going on?
I also saw All the Light in the Sky, which is a Joe Swanberg film. If you're not familiar with Joe Swanberg...
Isn't that Peter Griffin's neighbor on Family Guy?
No. Joe Swanson.
Oh, Swanson. Okay, close.
No, Joe Swanberg is a... He has use of his legs. He's
that's good. Good for him.
Yeah, he's got one up.
He's actually he's probably one of the most prolific directors of our time right now. He's a mumblecore director. I think in 2010 or 2011, he made like 6 films.
Is he the guy that did like he names his movies LOL and
yes,
OMG?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not LOL. Yeah. Well, he basically mumblecore is
you put a couple people in a room and they talk about their problems.
It's character studies using very low fidelity equipment, DIY culture.
It's very dogmatic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It came specifically from
the Dogma 95.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just a character study. This one has, I forget her name at the time, but she was in Happiness and Hung. Jane Addams.
She was also in Little Children, right?
Don't recall.
She was the one that the dude Rorschach takes out on a date, and then it goes horribly wrong.
Oh, good lord! That movie.
I think it's the same.
Oh god! No, it's all coming back.
I'm sorry, Drew.
I hate you so much, Chris.
I think it's the same person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is an interesting actress.
She's very good. She's also very good in this film.
And it's about her because she's like aging, right? Mm-hmm. She's coming to grips. Right, she's an actress, right? Mm-hmm. She plays an actress.
Yes.
Who's struggling with not getting the work, and maybe she knows someone who is getting the job, something like that, right?
Yeah, she lives on a beachfront property in Venice.
Can't all be wrong then.
Her niece, who's also an actress, who's a lot younger, is visiting her, and she's working on several different projects, and nothing really seems to be going forward. But she's kind of in that rut. It's just I really enjoyed it. I think if you already like mumblecore, you'll like this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not into the mumblecore, you're probably not. So I think it's
because it's so mumblecore.
It is.
Yeah, I'm very much on the fence about it.
Mm-hmm.
Bellflower, have you seen Bellflower?
I missed it.
That was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
All right, that's your mumblecore reference, Drew. Because just take out the Mad Max stuff and Medusa, Mother Medusa, and the flamethrower. And what do you got? You got a bunch of people sitting around talking about their problems or relationships.
Yeah.
A chick sleeps with a dude, and then another chick feels bad.
But there's some fantasy. There's some fantasy.
That's what I'm saying.
So take out
that stuff out. That's pure mumblecore.
Not interested.
Because they're breaking the rules. They're going over the top. They're introducing like violence and special effects. And it gets crazy, you know, but it's really well made. That one I really enjoy. But then on the other side,
I was about to say, take away all that stuff that was my favorite part of the movie, I don't want to see it.
Yeah, then it's just
just people talking.
Like I said, mumblecore, you have to have
a taste for it. Was it the puffy chair, the Duplass brothers?
Yep.
Like that's what really got people going. Like, hey, maybe we can actually this is a viable genre that we can actually do. Tiny Furniture is another one that made a big splash.
Tiny Furniture is a strange one in the mumblecore because it has a lot of the same aesthetics, but it's actually very well composed.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of other mumblecore films, not only do they set up the camera, it's in their hand. It's always jerky. Whereas Tiny Furniture is very well composed.
Yeah.
It's very strict.
That's probably why people like it so much more than your typical
mumblecore
movie.
But it does have
that
aesthetic. We don't have a lot of money.
It really is. The movies that take the mumblecore aesthetic and then add something to it, add a little bit more, those are the ones that seem to break through. Otherwise, it's just guys sitting around talking. And then you'll have film students, looking forward to this stuff. And like you said, people that are into the genre, but that's not that many people. And then eventually, someone like Mark Duplass is going to break out. He's like, I'm not going to do mumblecore anymore. There's actually money to be made out there, and I'm going to make
Mark
it.
Mark Duplass is in everything these days.
Now he's in everything.
Like, he's in the Mindy Project.
Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty. He was in...
When he popped up in that, I was like, I've had it. I've had it with this Mark Duplass. I just saw him in Safety Not Guaranteed. He's great in that.
That's great.
That's a great movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's in The League. I love him in The League.
Your Sister's Sister. But he's also helping a lot of filmmakers get their own films made, such as Your Sister's Sister and Safety Not Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So he's running,
and then,
he's running the show here now.
Jeff Who Lives at Home. You can call that like a blown up mumblecore movie because it's still about relationships and families.
As well as Cyrus, because him and his
Cyrus
brother have
with
gotten
Jonah Hill.
Yeah, they've gotten a little more mature with their films, and they're getting more well-known celebrities, but they're still keeping their own style. And
they still got their thing going on, you know, for sure, but they're growing and expanding. They're not sticking to the Dogma 95, which is great. A great learning tool to give yourself these very strict rules and limits on when you're making a movie. You know, it's great to give yourself limits so you find creative ways around that. But after a while, those limits really do limit you. You know, there really is no reason to like keep so many things out of your film or to not invest in a tripod, you know, or stuff like that. You know what I mean? Put some money into your stuff. You're putting all that. You learn how to put the creative energies into it. Great. Now go ahead and start. You learn the rules. Now start breaking those rules, because you're gonna know why to break them.
Yep.
People who stick to that dogma, it's like, I don't know. Like Lars von Trier, he was sticking to that dogma for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, break it out. Break it out. And then Melancholia. You know, thank you. Appreciate it. All right.
Well, this film is actually not on my list of 10, but it does
bring
it's a
up.
Good segue because Joe Swanberg is a character in it. It's called Be Good. It's from director, forget his first name, but it's Luby, something Luby.
Okay.
But it's about it's autobiographical about an independent filmmaker who is struggling in the film set festival circuit, and he has a new child, and he's, you know, taking care of her by day while his wife is now starting to get back into working. And so they're both struggling with this new life of theirs, and he's not too sure whether the filmmaking thing is working out or not.
Mm-hmm.
And where Swanberg comes in is he's sort of jealous, but he's also a friend of his. So he's starting to realize, is being an independent filmmaker what's best for my family?
Interesting.
So another mumblecore film.
That's an interesting topic, though. It's very relatable, obviously. It sounds kind of autobiographical. You know, how long can I sustain a living doing this?
Exactly. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to see themselves in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially at a film festival.
Absolutely.
Ooh, very interesting.
Yep.
That is an interesting one. What was that one called again? Go?
Be Good.
Be Good. I was going to say Go Home. That's wrong. Because they say Go Home a lot in I Declare War. Be Good. Be Good. Yes.
Actually, I think it was Todd Luby.
Todd Luby.
Yes.
Be Good. That's a funny name. That's kind of a...
Yeah.
Todd Luby. Todd Luby. Sir Todd Luby. All right, what else we got? Are we still talking about press screenings here, or are we back to the schedule?
Nope, I'm done with press screenings.
Okay, so we are on Saturday. Did we finish Saturday? Are we on Sunday?
No, I just wrote a list. Yeah. I didn't put like a...
You're trying to remember?
Yeah, so...
All right, well, best you can. We're not going to hold you to it.
The next one was Down East. This one is a Cinema Verite documentary.
Okay.
It's about a coastal Maine town, the Down East. That's why what they call it.
Okay.
And it's the only sardine factory left in the United States is closing down. And so now this town, that is sort of like the central industry.
Uh-huh.
And this one Italian immigrant is coming along trying to turn the factory into a lobster.
He wants to revitalize the town.
Correct, yeah.
So they didn't say what his plan was in the description. So he wants to turn a sardine factory into a lobster factory.
Lobster factory,
interesting.
Yes. And
then the whole point is, let me just see if I remember the movie, the description properly, so we're talking about the same one. It's just about how he's trying to revitalize the town through his idea, and a bunch of the people are for him, and then some people are against the idea, and it causes a lot of friction.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's a very typical narrative. Of course, it's a documentary. But
is it the type where they filmed everything as it was happening?
Correct. There's a few moments where they sort of interact. You just hear him asking a question, the filmmaker asking a question.
Yeah.
But a couple superimposed titles, and that's it.
Interesting. I love it.
I
love it when someone has the insight, the thought of the presence of mind to start
like,
filming,
you know,
something. I'm going to record the process of this.
Yes, it's at seeing the story unfold over the course of a year and a half is actually very interesting.
Yeah,
because one of the things that happens is, or what you think is like a big issue, it ends up being like a very small slice of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to get a federal government or excuse me, federal grant for I think $200,000 or something like that to help with the construction and the of the new factory.
Right.
But he has to have a certain amount of employees. Now he needs the he knows he needs these employees, but the townspeople have to vote on it because if he doesn't pay back the grant, the town has to.
Oh.
And this is already in an impoverished town. And
they get saddled with a bill like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so not only do you have that, and that issue alone is a very small slice of the financial issues this guy is trying to balance while he's trying to get this factory going.
So wow. So did this guy, he just saw like an opportunity, a place where, all right, maybe I can get my business started here because we have a factory that's closing down and a possible workforce looking into work.
That,
so
that's already has many of the skills. And they're, I mean, these are people who can't afford to not work and they want to work.
He essentially found the bad situation and is looking, tried to exploit it. But at the same time,
I wouldn't use the word exploit.
Well, I'm sure there are some people like on the town council, and so there are going to be people out there who see it as exploitation, a bad situation. But like he sees it as, I'm helping you guys out. I'm giving you guys a chance to make money again and be a viable, a viable town. You
know? I mean, he really wanted to. He was working specifically with the employees.
Yeah,
and it's a very heartfelt story because you see all these people who have all these medical issues and they've been working since as long as they could.
Yeah.
So for them to not work, to them, it's just a strange, you know, feeling. So getting back to work, they're all for it. So it's a, I really enjoyed the movie. If you really like
Down East.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, awesome. I definitely like documentaries like that where it's like we're gonna capture everything from the beginning, and we're not even sure how it's gonna play out, but we're gonna get it all until the end, and then we're gonna edit it together
and see what happens.
It's like I saw a couple years ago Paul LeBrant, A Matter of Taste, documentary about a chef in New York City. Who his goal was to be like a Michelin star chef and to get a at least three star review from New York Times food critic. And the documentary started in December 2001 and it followed this guy for almost 10 years of his life, like throughout his 20s up into his early 30s as he tried to accomplish his goal and all his ups and downs, and they were there for it all. You know, it's like what. That's dedication to record for that long and to keep following this guy and to keep coming back to that well, and then at the end compile all that footage and make it into a watchable hour and a half movie. A very, very good film. That's definitely on Netflix. A Matter of Taste. A Matter of Taste. I saw that at the Florida Film Fest like 2 years ago. One of the years where they really were hammering home the food theme because they like to couple
they
the food.
Have that, yeah.
Every year they do food and film, but like for the last couple years they really, really were like trying to push the food aspect. I felt like this year they scaled that back and it's a little more about the movies than it is about the food, but you know, it's either way it's a good hook.
Yeah.
And then every year we see a good film, a food documentary, like our first movie we saw, I think, when did we see that? On Sunday,
I think it was on Sunday.
That first weekend we saw SOMM on caps, the Sommelier documentary.
Yeah, Sunday at 2.
Did you get a chance to see that one?
Did not.
No, it was very good.
That's interesting. You've seen all these movies. We only saw a couple, but one of the ones is one
we saw. You were like, nope.
That works out then. That works great.
Exactly.
Somm is a great documentary.
It is.
It's about four guys.
Four
guys. I think three of them might have lived in the same town, and then one of them was somewhere else. I don't know how they connected the four of them.
I guess the only connection was they were all.
They're all doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one guy. I think was away, and the other three.
And the other three lived together.
Well, no.
Well, two of them moved together.
Two of them lived together. One of them lived by himself.
About these four guys, they're probably all in their 20s and 30s, pretty much right around our age.
Our age, yeah.
They're already sommeliers. You know, they're already very well versed.
Sommelier.
It's spelled sommelier.
I know. It's French, though. It's pronounced sommelier.
They're a bunch of sommeliers. And they're all about, you know, they're already really good. Well, they seem to be really good. They could be bullshitting too, but they're smelling the wine like it's from this region.
Well, they're all advanced sommeliers at this point in time, and they're all going for their master's exam.
Yeah, they have all attained the advanced, so they have like a green badge or whatever.
Green pin.
But there's the master exam that was established in the late 60s, and by the time this movie was made, up until this point, only 197 people had ever passed the exam since the late 60s. And the exam is only taken once a year, so if you don't pass it,
gotta wait 365.
You know, until you gotta take it again. And it's an intense exam where it seems everyone's main downfall is when they put six glasses of wine in front of you, three reds, three whites, and you have 25 minutes to pick up the unidentified wine, sniff it, swirl, do your thing, and identify the year it was made, the region in the world it was made, I mean, you got to be like, yeah, this is a 97 Napa Valley, you know.
Yeah, from taste alone.
Yeah,
from,
it's a blind tasting.
The texture, you know, the viscosity.
It's like, what is this wine?
The acidity, they have to break it down. Is this a new world wine? Is it an old world wine? You know, it's ridiculous.
So it requires a lot of discipline.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they hammered home.
Insane amount of discipline.
Like, these guys had flashcards, like stacks and stacks of flashcards.
Hundreds of thousands of them.
Everyone was joking about how whenever they pass the exam, they're all going to burn their stupid flashcards. They were so sick of them. And the personalities of the four guys were very interesting. There's this one dude, Cobble, like Alex Cobble, something like that. He's very, everyone called him Dad because he was always about like sitting you down and telling you what you're doing wrong and trying to tell you what to do right. He's a nice guy, but he definitely comes across as kind of a dick and full of himself.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would expect a Som to be like, you know. But then the other guy is just one guy that's really funny and really likable, and he comes up with all the best lines in the movie, you know, like he's just a naturally funny dude. And then these other guys are interesting. They all have very different personalities, but then they get together and they push each other and they try to help each other out. A bunch of wine snobs being wine snobs,
yep,
you know.
Pretty much.
But it's like any so-called expert or you know, if you spend a lot of time doing something, then you get to a point where like you just maybe know too much for your own good,
yeah.
But you still don't know enough. And this movie, you know, this movie worked because without giving exactly away like who passed what or whatever, who didn't pass. But by the end of the movie, when they're giving out the results, the whole packed theater in unison, they were clapping and cheering, or they're like, oh, we're getting disappointed, like all in unison. So
yeah.
The movie, like,
it was very effective.
It worked, dude. That's the definition of a crowd pleaser, you know, because yeah. The movies I saw, that's the only one that really had that visceral reaction. Actually, of all the movies I've seen at film festivals over the years, that probably had the strongest reaction towards the end of like reveals and stuff and the audience being related to it. It's between that and I just had it on the tip of my tongue from a couple years ago, a movie I saw, and I can't remember it now. So that it's very interesting.
Well, they did it really well, you know. They made you invested in these people.
Yes, absolutely.
Like you were emotionally invested in their struggle for some reason.
Absolutely. So that's one I would definitely SOMM. I would definitely keep an eye out for that one. It's very, very well made, and it's also an interesting mix of. A lot of it is just very, very simple. People sitting at tables, talking to the camera, interviews with people. Very straightforward documentary style. And then some of it's very flashy, slow motion photography of wine, of grapes being harvested and wine being made.
Glasses
of wine
broken.
Being like, it looks like they're being shot by bigger and bigger caliber bullets as the movie goes on, to the point where glasses are exploding and with high res photography and everything. So it's an interesting mix of like super arty documentary and then like very straightforward. Like chill documentary.
I guess I'll have to look forward to that one.
It's definitely one to look forward to. Yeah, and it only played once too, so I'm surprised it didn't sell out.
Spotlight film.
Yeah, it was like one of the food spotlight films. Mm-hmm. Last year, the food spotlight was Hero Dreams of Sushi. That sold out quick.
Was good.
That was.
That's on Netflix.
Netflix.
Right now.
That's how I eventually saw it. Yeah. Oh, so good. All right. So that's what we saw opening weekend. What else did you see around during the week? I guess now we're getting into the week. Generally speaking. I tried to do it chronologically, but it's cool.
It didn't work.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it didn't work. most of the films I'm actually about to list are actually part of this past weekend.
Okay.
A lot of the great films.
Okay.
Broken, I saw yesterday.
Broken.
That's the one where
a guy, his car breaks down on the side of a highway.
Not even close.
Okay.
Wrong.
Which one is that one?
It's actually a British kitchen sink drama with a little bit of a hyperlink cinema aspect to it.
Okay.
It's about a young girl who has type 1 diabetes,
mm-hmm.
and she lives in a cul-de-sac with... there's two other families in this cul-de-sac, and there's a domino effect that kind of triggers throughout the families. One side, there's a man whose wife recently passed away, and he's having anger management issues. He also has three very bellicose daughters, you know, the punk, very rude and crude. And then there's another family who has a young son who has some sort of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really nice guy, but he just doesn't have those social mores that we're really used to. So that kind of gets in the way of these young girls who
right.
are very crude. And this other young girl, Skunk, she also has an older brother. So she's kind of is coming of age. But she's learning to see this dichotomy right in her own, cul-de-sac, and just a I want to get too much into it because there's so much. It's very densely layered.
Yeah, you don't want to like give stuff away either. Yeah.
But it's a kitchen sink drama with mm-hmm. a good amount of comedy.
British.
English. Yes.
English?
I think it's British. I think it's,
you know, but you're not sure it's Irish or...
No, it's definitely not Irish. I think it's British.
English? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Welsh, maybe?
No, definitely.
I never know. A lot of those accents run together for me. I have no idea.
No, this one, the vernacular, I think an American audience can pick up very well.
Okay. Yeah, that is actually kind of, you know, that's kind of important for American audiences. Like, are they speaking that funny talk? I can't understand what they're saying, you know?
No subtitles required.
Like,
speaking the Queens.
Like Attack the Block. Where they're speaking, like, street slang.
Yeah,
come on, guys.
Like, London hood slang.
Yeah, you know, or, like, the limey. Every other word out of Terrence Stamp's mouth is, like, cockney rhyming slang. Like, what? They have to have the character explain what he's saying throughout the movie. Yep. Like, no one understands it. It's ridiculous.
I really enjoy Broken. It was a little on the depressing side towards the end, but I do recommend it.
Okay.
Another depressing film that I saw back-to-back with Broken was called The Hunt. It's a Danish film.
With Mads Mikkelsen.
Yep.
Oh, that's one I'm contemplating maybe seeing today. Mm-hmm. That's one where I definitely know this one. Mads Mikkelsen plays, I believe, a teacher
mm-hmm.
who is accused of child molestation.
Mm-hmm.
And then while the investigation plays out, pretty much everyone, like, he becomes the town pariah.
Yes.
And it's just about his...
There's a very strong camaraderie among the families of the small town.
Yeah.
Like, the person who... The child who accused him of this.
Yeah.
She is the daughter of his best friend.
Oh, that's not good.
So it's a very sensitive.
Tense. Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it because mm-hmm. it really talks about, you know, I know so many times where I, as a child, just said truthful things, you know, just like... I remember this one person, she was pregnant, she already had the child, and I was like maybe 4 or 5, and I asked, why are you still fat?
Yeah.
Now that I'm almost 30, I know not to say those things,
right.
But that's sort of the mindset that we have, and it's like how, and it's so easy for children to merge their imagination with these little white lies.
Right, right.
And so that's sort of what it's about, and it's just a really good narrative film.
Yeah.
Danish. I think it's, I don't know if it's produced or distributed by Zentropa, which is the Lars von...
His company, distribution mm-hmm. company.
Yeah. So I do recommend that one.
I love Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, he's great.
I'm enjoying him right now on Hannibal.
Yes.
That just started last week.
Oh,
he was also very good on A Royal Affair. I don't know if you saw that. It's also another Danish film, which was about one of their kings
mm-hmm.
During the Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
He was mentally challenged, and
the king was mentally challenged.
King was mentally challenged.
All right,
and he
it's here for inbreeding.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
Mikkelsen.
His character
probably mispronounced.
Yes,
that. He's Swedish.
He's a doctor who has a lot of. You know, progressive Renaissance ideals.
Uh-huh.
He becomes a good friend of the king.
Interesting.
And he also ends up having an affair with the king's wife.
Of course.
Sweet.
I mean, have you seen Mads? He's a tall, statuesque man. And then, you know, the retard king is not. Doesn't look very pleasant next to Mads.
Although, to be honest, if I was friends with the king, this king, I'd have so much fun because he's just batshit crazy.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
A royal affair.
A royal affair. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like King's Speech. Sort of sounds
sort
like
of,
a
yeah,
guy comes in and helps a king with a disability of some sort.
Absolutely.
Flaws of royalty. The mm-hmm. the sameness between the commoner and the royal
we
class.
We don't see much of a commoner aspect to it. Well, not really. No,
so Mads
really.
Is still playing a high society type?
He is. Yeah, he's a doctor. Yeah.
All right. So King's Speech has that one up on him. Then. Maybe the Danes aren't so into classism. They don't. It's not so much of an issue for them as is the Brits.
Probably not.
Because class warfare is huge in the UK. That's a big deal. Maybe in Denmark everything's cool. Maybe everyone's friendly and the GDP is spread out nicely.
Apparently, it's a big thing here in America too, from what I've heard.
Yes.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
the war is raging on, my brother.
A lot of these Nordic countries like Sweden, Norway, Denmark,
Scandinavia in general.
There is less of a social disparity and income inequality.
Yeah.
Their taxes are also higher because of it.
That's true.
But at least in Royal Affair, we don't see much of that.
Okay.
They do tackle that because there's a lot of progressivism in that film.
And during the time period, you're saying Renaissance, that's forever ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
John Locke is talked about in the film. So you do, it is, you know, it is in the film. It's not a central aspect.
Right. Yep. It's just a backdrop. Mm,
absolutely.
The flavoring.
Yep.
All right. So what else we got? Because I'm looking forward to The Hunt. So I might be seeing that one. It depends on what... Because I know all the movies I want to see tonight you've already seen. So it depends on what you're going to tell me and what's available. So here we go. What else you got?
This one I know there are no more screenings of. It's called Starbuck. It's a French film.
Is it French?
French film.
For some reason, I thought it was Canadian. Is it French-Canadian?
No. It is...
It's strictly French.
French.
And, okay, French comedy.
Now, there will be an American... They're working on an American remake with...
Of course they are. With Steve Carell.
Not Steve
with,
Carell.
With Will Ferrell.
Close.
With Jack Black.
No.
With John C. Reilly.
No.
With...
Seth Rogen.
No. Seth Rogen. Woody Harrelson.
I actually lost. It was on my tip of the head.
You forgot? Maybe yeah, we said it.
But essentially, it's a movie about a man who, at early 20s,
yeah.
he made 600-plus visits to a sperm bank, and 533 children have been born because of his output.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
wow.
They're suing him for his identity.
Nice.
And he, of course, he's starting to realize that, you know, that's going to affect... He's kind of like a loser in his life. His family has a deli. He just doesn't do anything right, you know? And so he's learning to, on top of that, his girlfriend, who he hadn't spoken to in a while, turns out she's pregnant.
Of course.
So he is kind of...
This guy is super sperm.
He's he's both forced into becoming a father in two different aspects.
Right.
So it's very funny. It's probably one of the most humorous straight-ahead comedies I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. I really recommend it. I also like the title because, you know, there's a Starbucks in every quarter.
Yeah.
This guy
he's
like
got
a
he Starbucks. Yeah, yeah. He planted those franchises all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's got to pay them bills.
So I recommend that. And I wish I could remember the actor that's aligned to the American remake that they're working on.
Zach Galifianakis.
No.
Charlie Sheen.
No.
Is it someone fat and bearded?
No.
Is it
Vince Vaughn?
Vince Vaughn.
That's
oh,
what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
John Favreau is producing it.
Yeah, it's gonna be terrible.
It all makes sense.
Yeah.
It will be terrible. Just watch the original.
But, oh yeah. I recommend watching the original.
Starbuck. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've seen that like that poster around for a while. You know, and the trailer's been on Apple, the Apple.com.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
That only played once, you say, or
twice?
No, but it's done already.
Yeah, it's done.
That
you
one's
won't be
done
able
already.
To see it
yeah.
at the Florida Film Festival. We'll probably come back to the end.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's done. Usually gets that stuff back. All right, what else we got?
Pieta.
That's the South Korean film.
The South Korean film.
That's one of the ones I'm interested in tonight.
Yep, it's so good. If you are not familiar with South Korean cinema, it's probably one of the most bombastic national cinemas right now.
Yeah,
their
cinema revival of the last like
decade plus.
Has it been that long? Yeah, it's been a while now. I was going to say 6-7 years, but I guess it's been more than that.
I mean, we see more of it, but a lot of these, a lot of the films that have come central to at least the American understanding of South Korea, South Korean film, is like Old Boy. Like
Old Boy is
Old Boy's
like,
crazy.
Old Boy is like America's introduction to Chan-wook Park.
Exactly.
But then you go back and you see the Symphony for Mr. Vengeance, Joint Security
Absolutely.
Area, which was, I guess that was like 2001, 2002 JSA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is from the director of which Korean films?
Duke.
Love saying
it's it's another very depressing film.
Yeah,
it's about an enforcer for a loan shark who kind of targets this urban, almost slum-like area where it's mostly machinist shops, and so he puts out insurance claims on the people who loan money, and they don't pay, cripples them, and gets the insurance money.
Nice.
But the movie really takes a turn when he was abandoned by his mother, and when his mother shows up.
Ah, the money.
Oh,
yes.
She comes back.
Now, it's not as violent or gratuitous in violence or...
As some South Korean films can...
Other,
yeah.
But there are some of the concepts in it are... very unsettling. There's a very unsettling scene. There's also some really strange cinematography you may not be used to in said scenes.
They like to get experimental, which is, you know, a lot of fun. I really enjoy that stuff.
So it may not be a lot of the violence itself is insinuated, but the themes, they're in your imagination.
Nice.
And they really will unsettle you, turn your stomach.
Very nice. I like that. I like that a lot.
And it's very, once again, very unconventional.
Is it the guy who did Mother?
No.
No.
No. Okay. I'm not familiar with this particular director's oeuvre.
Yeah. Okay. It might, yeah. Who knows? It might be someone we haven't seen much of from lately. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's exciting. Pieta. Mm-hmm. And then you also saw the other one that I want to see that is playing this evening. And these movies overlap, which is why I have to figure out what I want to see, is Jeff Nichols' Mud.
Yes.
With Matthew McConaughey.
Which is the very last on my list. But yeah. It is probably one of the best films I've seen so far this year.
Nice.
It's definitely among them.
Nice.
It is about two children, mm-hmm. Two teenage young men, mm-hmm. who discover a boat in the trees in this island off the Arkansas River.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it's the Arkansas, but a river in Arkansas.
It's like a speedboat sized boat, you know.
No, more like a fishing boat.
It's a fishing boat.
It's a fishing boat.
So it's even smaller than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And
a little skiff.
Yes. So they come upon Mud, who is played by Matthew McConaughey.
Yep.
And he's on the run. He's a fugitive,
mm-hmm.
and he wants these kids to help him get the boat down from the trees, get in working order, so he can ride off into the sunset with his girlfriend.
Okay.
And but on top of that, the person that he had killed, there's bounty hunters looking for him, the
uh-huh.
authorities looking for him.
Uh-huh.
So it's a very, you know, it's a blood vendetta.
Yeah.
A lot of police corruption.
Yeah.
On top of that, the lead character, can't recall his name.
Is it one of the kids?
One of the kids.
Yeah.
Yes. He's discovering his own love. And one of the reasons why he's sympathetic towards it is that, you know, he's learning what love is. He's learning, you know, what heartbreak is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And on top of that, his parents are divorcing. And the River Authority is going to, I guess, do eminent domain on their river home.
Oh, wow.
So
there's a lot going on.
A lot going on. It's, you know, it's a river lake. It's a river town,
yep.
You know, so there's a lot of industry about that. And just a really good thriller. A lot of comedy that you wouldn't see. That you wouldn't expect from a film like this.
Yeah.
As we were talking earlier, a lot of Mark Twain feeling. It's a very American film.
Interesting. And yeah, well, that's one thing that Jeff Nichols has gotten with all his movies. They're all described as being, you know, like Americana.
Absolutely.
Steeped in Americana. Mm-hmm. And really, like the middle of the country type stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
like the Great Plains and the farmland and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Take Shelter. I yes. assume you've seen that one, right? With Michael Shannon. That one is very much like... I don't know if anyone found a way to make the Midwestern landscape just a flat ground and the big sky. I don't know if I found anyone else make it so menacing
yeah.
and like full of imminent danger.
The only other person I can think of is Malick.
Right? Malick, yeah. Nichols definitely has a very Malick appeal where he's, you know, focusing on nature. It's like a lot of early David Gordon Green stuff
yep.
was very
mm-hmm.
dreamy and all about drifting cameras and finding, you know, little spurts of actual life going on. Like, oh, there's a butterfly. Let's get that real quick. Because you can't direct the butterfly.
Yep.
All you can do is capture it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what these guys are trying to do,
yes.
it seems.
Yeah.
You know, like, a lot of them are more controlled than they let on.
Yeah.
Malick apparently is batshit crazy, though.
Well, yeah, of yeah. course. Yeah. I mean, look at his movies.
He's insane. But yeah, Jeff Nichols. And then you haven't had a chance to see Shotgun Stories.
That's the one I have not had a chance
Michael
to see.
Shannon's in. Mm-hmm. Is he in
he's
Mud?
Yes, he's in Mud as
okay,
well.
Okay, so
yeah.
he's in all of his movies.
He actually plays a very interesting character in Mud. Something
oh.
very strange. Like,
when has Michael Shannon not played?
Well, you know, I also just recently saw him in The Iceman at the Gasparilla International.
Oh, you saw
Club.
Iceman?
Saw Iceman.
Oh, I want to see The Iceman. That's the one where he plays the killer, The
yep.
Iceman. He's
yeah.
killed,
oh,
like,
yeah.
He's claimed to have killed like 200 people or something.
A little over 100, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's such a stark contrast because you have this a little bit more of a goofier character in Mud.
Yeah.
And then you have the Iceman.
Nice, yeah, where he's
so,
cold-blooded just
yeah.
as the Iceman.
So,
yeah.
So, and
then later this summer we'll get to see him as General Zod.
Yes.
Which is
so,
very
so,
weird.
So if you're kind of, I mean, Michael Shannon has sort of been typecast recently. You know,
that's a crazy
films,
guy.
But in this film, you know, he's a little bit more sentimental
Interesting.
Towards what's going on. He's the uncle of one of the lead children in the
yeah.
film.
Yeah,
and so it's just a...
Very nice.
Nice role for him to be in.
Very nice. Awesome. Yeah, yeah, well, I definitely got to check out Mud, and you got to check out Shotgun Stories.
Mm-hmm.
What else we got on the list?
I think that's it out of my 10.
That's out of your 10? All right.
See if I can quickly take a look of anything else I might be...
I do know that Drew and I, the other movie that we saw...
Iceberg Slim.
Portrait of a Pimp.
Yes, I saw that one as well.
All right, let's finish up with some Iceberg Slim, and then we'll close out the show here because we're coming up on an hour. About.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, see, that's what happens when you talk movies, man. It gets
yeah.
fun, and before you know it, Iceberg Slim, Portrait of a Pimp. This is about... Iceberg Slim,
and he is a pimp.
He was a pimp. I'm sure he's quite dead.
No, I'm sure. I mean, sure he's dead now, but he's sure he's still pimping it up in heaven.
But if I
pimping an angelic hoes.
You need pimps in heaven. If you don't know who Iceberg Slim is, he was a pimp from the 40s and 50s, and then after a few run-ins with the law, and some time in solitary that broke him, and he became he reformed himself. He didn't want to live on the streets anymore. He tried to get a real job, and his wife, his new wife, was like, well, why don't we write your stuff down and see if we can make a book out of it? So he writes Pimp, Story of My Life, and it just tells it. It's his autobiography. It becomes a huge hit, and then he writes 6 more in books and becomes a world-renowned author. And the way this documentary positions him, he actually, they say he's pretty much one of the most important black authors of the 20th century.
Yep.
Because of all the doors he opened and because of the black voice that he represented that wasn't represented by other authors at the time. Like, you know, everyone knows Ralph Ellison, The Invisible Man.
Yep.
But that's not the same as Pimp, Story of My Life,
no.
Which still went on to influence many people and gave you a different perspective on the black experience, so to speak. That's what they were building. Anyway, the Holloway House?
Holloway House.
The publishing company.
Which is interesting because later in the film you start realizing that the publisher sort of treated him like he was one of the hoes.
He was totally getting pimped up by Holloway House.
That's the way any business is, absolutely.
Very cyclical.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was like, you know, this is all the money that we're getting. Like, you're going to give me your money, baby, and then here's a little cut. No, I'm sorry. You know, this is all I got to give you. But you keep writing books, right? You'll write another book. We'll
Hollywood
sell it for you.
Does the same thing.
It's all the same.
You know, you just made $1 billion. Actually, it took us a lot more than $1 billion to make the movie.
Yeah. Hollywood is infamous for their book cooking.
Yep.
Yeah, they're
Hollywood accounting.
Yeah, Hollywood accounting. He's like, we can make anything non-profitable or profitable as we see fit. Those bastards. Iceberg Slim is really well made. What I found most interesting, I'm sure this happened because I think we went to different screenings. At our screening was the filmmaker was there, the director was there.
Yeah.
Jorge Hinojosa.
He was not there at my screening.
No, he wasn't. He was at our screening.
Apparently he's a local boy.
He's a local boy.
Yes, I believe this is one of the few Florida films at the Florida Film Festival.
From a Florida-born filmmaker?
Yeah.
Because he is based out of L.A. now. Mm-hmm. He said he hasn't been back. He grew up in Castleberry all the way up to high school. He was living in Castleberry before he moved. Apparently he hasn't been back in 30 years, but the dude looks like he's in his early 20s. It's crazy. Like, this guy's story is not adding up over here. But then, you know, I looked up online.
So.
It is L.A. Who knows what he's doing out there? No, he just looks like, I don't know, maybe he has the right genes. I don't know what's going on. He's just a lucky fella.
Fish oil supplements.
Yeah. A lot of
HGH.
A lot of oil, maybe some HGH. But it's done with Final Level Entertainment, which is Ice-T's production company. So that's why he's like all over the thing. And then it says Ice-T presents a portrait of him, Iceberg Slim. But then I found the gathering of talking heads very interesting. Ice-T, obviously, you know, he knows what's up. Bill Duke, the director and actor Bill Duke, the dude from Predator and Commando. That's how I know him. I know him as a dude from Predator. Like the other black guy from Predator. Not Carl Weathers, but the other black guy. Or you know, who's also the guy in Commando.
Yeah.
That's how I know Bill Duke. Big, tough guy. When he's talking in this movie, he's talking like this. He has a very high-pitched voice, and he's talking very... It's like, who is this dude? That's not Bill Duke.
Yes, it is.
I'm looking at him like, is that Bill Duke? And then his name comes up. Like, why is he talking like that? He doesn't sound like the tough guy in all of his movies. He's always old. He's always behind a desk and talking really tough. And then not in normal life. Dude's a good actor. I'm a Bill Duke fan. Who else would they have?
Snoop Dogg,
Henry Rollins, and then some authors like Odie Hawkins.
The Reverend Don Magiquan.
What was up with that guy?
The pimp.
Yeah, that guy's...
Was that guy a pimp? He had posters that were like speaking engagements or something. I don't know.
I think he's Snoop Dogg, or now he's called Snoop Lions. I think he's like his right-hand man.
Really?
Because I think he was on... Bill Maher like a month ago.
Oh, really?
And that guy came up really briefly, like dressed very similar.
He always dresses like that. He's been around for like 10 years now.
The suit with dollar bills on it, and
because he's all about the pimp lifestyle.
Interesting.
He's the one that came up with the pimp cups that all the rappers had for a while,
like the crunk cups.
Yeah, that's his baby.
Oh, wasn't he holding one during an interview?
I think he was. Yeah, I think he was.
That's him. That's his brainchild.
Wow. What was his name again?
The Reverend Don Magiquan.
Don Magiquan.
He is on the thing it said spiritual advisor.
That's right, it did. Spiritual advisor.
He's a spiritual advisor.
He's definitely a spiritual advisor I need.
Yep.
Advise me to some money, Don Magiquan. So, we definitely all enjoyed that one. And it's really cool that he's a filmmaker who's from here. So he was at our screening, and he introduced it real quick.
And then he was like, oh, I've got some friends here who I haven't seen in 20 years.
Yeah, he's got friends from high school, like, in the audience. And, it was a little heartwarming. He was like, oh, that's very nice. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how it was really cool to, because he's taking the movie to a whole bunch of festivals. And I looked it up. It's been at every festival already. But he said this one, it means obviously it's something special to him because he's back home. It's a homecoming. I think that's exactly how he described it. So it was cool. And then he did a Q&A afterwards, I'm sure it was fantastic. I'm sure it was a wonderful Q&A.
I'm sure it was.
So we all enjoyed it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
We're all fans of Iceberg Slim. And really, I mean, is there anything that you didn't enjoy? I don't want to really like start shitting on these independent
there's
movies.
There's nothing that I would say skip entirely. There's just a few films that maybe you're a little disappointed to me. One of them was Big Star, which is about a band that never really made it. They were from early 70s.
Yeah,
lots of critical praise. Their first album came out, all the critics loved it so much that even the not the distributor, but one of their managers was like, let's start a rock conference and bring in these rock writers from everywhere, from all around the country. And they had a rock conference, and critics like myself.
Critics, no critics.
They got a room of hundreds of critics to dance.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
But for some reason, the music just, either the distributors just never released it properly, or the distributor ended up closing. But really, the movie just didn't relay why I should listen to this band.
Why the band was so important to so many other people.
Exactly. I mean,
it sounds like Searching for Sugar Man.
It very similar.
Which was a great movie.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And the problem I have with not really a problem, just they didn't really convey. Like, the music to me just didn't. With Sugar Man, the music, like the first few songs, I was just like, I can feel this music. With Big Star, it just didn't get to me. Most of your listeners are probably going to know Big Star from the theme song to That 70s Show.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In the Street, mm-hmm. and a lot of alternative rock acts from that kind of...
From the 90s.
From the 80s, 90s.
Bands like Flaming Lips.
R.E.M., they cite Big Star as an influence.
So if you don't like that alt-rock stuff from the 90s, you have Big Star to blame.
Yes.
Yeah,
awesome.
Pretty much.
But, I they had a lot of the songs, and nothing just really got to me.
Not like that Sugar Man stuff. The Rodrigo Sixto, that guy.
Yeah. Really good.
Some really good music.
That's a great documentary, but Big Star just didn't do it for
me. Very interesting.
But there's another movie that I did enjoy that I just saw last night, Big Brains. Bad Brains, excuse me.
I saw the Bad Brains documentary last night. I wanted to see it. I just couldn't do it, man. I'll so beat.
Completely opposite of Big Star. I never heard of this band, but the story is fascinating.
It is a fascinating story. That's part of the reason why I did skip out on it, because I kind of do know the Bad Brains story a little bit.
That one I definitely say don't skip. That one is about an all black punk band.
Yeah, from Washington, D.C.
From Washington, D.C.
Yep.
And
early 80s.
They influenced a lot of other punk bands.
All of them.
Beastie Boys, a lot of bands.
Because that time period was like them, Circle Jerks, Dead Kennedys, like they're really influential punk bands. They started punk music, as we know, at hardcore. Yep.
They started a record for the fastest band. The fastest.
Yeah.
And the strangest part is the lead singer, HR.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very effeminate man, but on stage you would have no idea he's doing backflips.
He's doing black flips.
And he's just really outgoing personality.
Yeah.
A lot of growling. But off stage, he's very,
very chill.
Peaceful.
He's kind of Prince-like.
Yes. Yeah. And
actually, the opposite of Prince, because Prince, get him on stage, he's like, hee-hee, but then get him backstage.
He's like, yo, bitch.
Like, what's up? You don't like my music? You got a problem with that?
I'll fucking kill you.
But HR, he's just so... He's very unreliable. Over the years, it's the same story over and over again. Like, we're going to tour, we're going to have a new album.
And then there's usually the singer, too.
That is a very interesting story.
And then I assume it gets into when they go to Jamaica. And did it get into that at all? And then
they didn't get into that at all.
Really?
They did talk about how they briefly touched upon Rastafarianism.
Yeah,
there briefly.
They changed their name to Soul Brains.
Yes, yeah. Once they got into Rastafarianism, they used it throughout their...
They started adding,
One of their initial single had an A side and B side, which showed the dualities.
Okay, yeah.
And you could see they pretty much stuck with the punk metal throughout most of the time. But yeah. Rastafarianism, because the thing is, with punk, it's about destruction and anger.
They're very different.
Their music, it's messages. All about, if you listen to the lyrics, positive messages.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I am a Bad Brains fan. Those guys are...
Never heard of them.
They're
but
awesome.
I'm a fan now.
They're very influential. Very influential. That's awesome that you got to see that one. So that's cool. Two music docs. One little didn't convey the importance of the band. The other one definitely got
it
across.
Did. Yep.
All right. And actually, I wanted to ask you real quick before we sign off. Did you see any short films that stuck out to you? Because we managed to see... We saw that one short film in front of Iceberg Slim. Was it Skate Yourself Clean?
Yeah, Skate Yourself Clean.
I remember seeing it. I don't remember what it's about.
It's just about a dude.
It's about a dude
who
works two jobs, and then Sunday he goes to the Cimarron Skate Rink and does his thing. And
I did see that one. I did enjoy that one.
I liked how loud it was. It was very loud. Maybe they just had the sound cranked up in the theater, but it was very loud, intense music. And it's just 8 minutes of this guy and how he loves a skate, and it makes everything make sense for him. You know, and when he dies, he wants his skates in his coffin with him, but not on top because that's when he wants to steal them. He wants his skates and a burger in his hand in his coffin, and then he'll be happy. He seemed like a really nice dude.
I do remember seeing that one. I didn't see any of the shorts programs.
Oh yeah, the shorts program. I've seen enough of those in past years when I have had friends short films and I've put in my time.
It's really hard to see short films because you're constantly being introduced to new characters and new story ends
and it's
difficult to do.
And as much as I feel that there really is nothing better than a great short film, there's also nothing worse than a bad short film. And at these short film things, you know, no matter how many entries you get and how great the application process is and the filtering process, you're still going to get like over 50% bad movies in those short film things. I find very rarely are they really good. Like, oh, that was memorable. That was worth everyone's time and effort and money. You know, sorry, short film filmmakers. But keep working though. Keep trying. Don't stop. Don't let me get you down. All right, guys. We went longer than I wanted to, but we had a lot of great information here for this bonus episode.
Bonus.
That's a Comedy Bang Bang thing. I don't want to steal those guys.
All right, I'll stop doing
Expect
it.
Expect a lawsuit soon.
We'll do...
Oh, that's the least of our lawsuit worries, friend.
Yeah, that is the least of our lawsuit. They don't got any money. But I do love them. Thanks a lot for listening to this bonus episode. A lot of great, great movies out there, independent films, documentary stuff to keep an eye out for the next year, because that's when this stuff is going to be made available to you. And some movies won't even come out for another year or two. There's this one movie from last year's festival called Magic Valley. I've been waiting for that thing to come out since that. That was the best film of last year, I felt, for sure. And... man, it's still nowhere to be found. Still need distribution. It's just there's a little too out there for some people, I guess. And then another one, My Suicide, which I saw that like two film festivals ago.
Then
it took a while for it to come up on Netflix.
It's it was renamed
Archie's
Final
Project. Yeah, because they didn't like My Suicide. The distributors probably didn't like it. They wanted to change it. It's a better title. That one was a very effective movie.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Hey, so there you go. That's film festival coverage. We're gonna take a little break. I'm gonna mix this baby down, and then we're gonna start recording episode 14.
14.
Good stuff. We're gonna do a normal episode. So thanks a lot for listening, guys, and we'll be back with another episode soon. See you later. Oh, actually, wait, stop. Real quick, plug your stuff.
Oh yes,
I want you to put in plugs for both episodes.
Okay. You can. You can visit all my reviews, blog posts, and some of the other correspondence that are on my website at cinemafunk.com.
Cinemafunk.com.
And you can also follow me on Twitter at cinemafunk.
Yes.
I'm also on Facebook. And,
cinemafunk.
It's all good stuff. It gets the Crespo seal of approval, for sure. Cinemafunk.com. All right, guys. So that's the real ending. Here we go. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.